Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Welcome to Bollywood is for Lovers, part of the Alberta Podcast Network. Locally grown, community supported. I'm Erin Fraser.
And I'm Matt Bowes. In this episode, we're discussing two films from the 1950s about people trying to make it in the big city, both available now for streaming on the Criterion Channel.
First, Balraj Sahani becomes a rickshaw driver in Kolkata in order to raise the money to save his land from a greedy thakur in Bimal Roy's award-winning 1953 socialist drama, Do Bigha Zaman.
Then Raj Kapoor plays an honest and educated man who, against his better judgment, gets involved in a series of cons in 1955's record-breaking Shri 420, which was also directed by Raj Kapoor.
Before we begin, we would like to respectfully acknowledge that we record this podcast on Treaty 6 territory, home of First Nations and Métis people. Matt!
Yep.
You and I are fans and collectors of something known as the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
We have, how many do you think we have?
120, maybe? I'd have to look at my
list.
Really? Well, I include the Eclipse series as individuals in my Criterion list, so maybe like 100 even.
Yeah. The Criterion Collection is a boutique label that puts out DVDs and Blu-rays of the best of world cinema.
Quote unquote. It is their sort of take on this.
Yes.
Like, it's not like some sort of world cinema society gets together and thinks like, okay, we're gonna have like 10 French movies this year, 2 Japanese movies, mm-hmm. A couple American movies, and I don't know, maybe one from India. Although it kind of feels that way sometimes.
Although every year they do put out like this fun infographic that hints at all the films that they're going to put out.
Yeah, it's a cartoon and you have to try and figure out what the drawings mean.
It's always fun to figure out that drawing. So we've been collecting these Blu-rays and DVDs for years. They make up probably the bulk of our physical film collection.
Getting there, yeah.
Yeah. And so they put out all the films from directors like Akira Kurosawa and Jean Renoir, Ingmar Bergman, kind of the big giants of world cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they don't have a lot of films from India.
There's a fair amount of criticism of this. Because
yes.
I'll say one thing. I feel like sometimes they get their lunch eaten by other boutique labels.
Yes.
So Kino Lorber especially, it seems like some things just switch between them.
Yeah, and we should say, you know, they are certainly not the only boutique label. They're not the only boutique label that we collect. Those numbers that they put on the spine, I think they get you.
Oh,
it's so enticing.
Well, the design of the covers is so good.
But it's similar to Masters of Cinema in the UK.
I think they are connected, actually, yeah.
Yeah, are they? Because Sunrise is on Masters of Cinema, but it's not a Criterion.
It seems like when a new 4K gets struck, like they make a deal with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, but Criterion is connected to Janus, though.
Yeah, Janus.
Depending on how you pronounce it.
Yeah. But, like, they were kind of the only game in town for a while, at least doing well. But nowadays, you have Aero Academy. Mm-hmm. You have all of these labels that have sprung up to do old VHSs and, like, grindhousey type stuff. Mm-hmm. Kino Lorber. Like, Criterion's not the only game in town right now. But if you listen to film Twitter, they might as well be, right?
Yeah, and they're still certainly the most popular. And again, like, we...
They're well-regarded.
We collect them, so we understand why.
There's essays that come with the...
Oh, yeah, you love the essays.
Yeah, I love to read the essays. And there's typically lots of good special features, which I don't really watch that often. But something, it could be like a student film by the director. So on the Videodrome DVD, I think it has...
Crimes of Future?
Crimes of the Future, yeah. Like the first Cronenberg film. Yeah. So it's really like just trying to make a really good presentation of a movie. Mm-hmm. And they have something called the Eclipse series, which is DVDs that are kind of more bare bones, but they come in like packs of five.
Mm-hmm. And they're also often new restorations of the films, which are often done in kind of collaboration with the Janus, who releases them theatrically. So, yeah, we're big fans of the collection. Recently, or I guess a couple of years ago, they launched the Criterion Channel, which is a streaming service.
It was another thing called Filmstruck first.
Yeah.
And that was owned by Time Warner, and then they spun it off. But, yeah, Criterion eventually was able to put together their own streaming service, which must have been expensive.
Yeah, and Filmstruck was done in collaboration with TCM, and so we never got it in Canada. Mm-hmm. So we've never experienced Filmstruck.
It seemed nice.
And one of the benefits of the Criterion Channel, of them spinning off and doing their own streaming service, is that we did get it in Canada. So we have the Criterion Channel. It is not necessarily all the films that are in the collection. In fact, they curate a lot of different kinds of film packages for the channel. There's a lot of different things, and stuff is always coming and going, and there's always kind of interesting themed packages. We were recently checking out one on kind of new wave, or not new wave, but contemporary Korean cinema that we were quite enjoying. So we've long criticized Criterion for not including a lot of Indian cinema.
Well, Rai is basically
they have a number
big one.
And of Satyajit Ray films. Wedding. They have The Cloud Cap Star, another Bengali film, and they have Mira Nair's Monsoon Wedding.
Mm-hmm. Not even any more Mira Nair movies.
Yeah, I believe they're getting Mississippi Masala, though.
That'd be good.
Yeah, which is a really hard film to track down, so I'm very excited. It would be great to see them put out Salon Bombay. And yeah, we are not criticizing them at all for putting out those films. But
they have their editorial. They know what they want to do, but...
In general, that's it. They've also been criticized for not putting out a lot of films by Black filmmakers.
Well, yeah, especially Black filmmakers, yeah.
Yeah, as you were saying, there's a...
There was a big thing in the New York Times about it. Aaron will put a link, but it was basically, like, trying to nail down, like, okay, so why is the Criterion Collection so white? And what does this mean for film appreciation as a whole when one of the arbiters of taste is mostly saying... You know, French people, essentially, because that's got to be the biggest part of their back catalog, French New Wave.
And Japanese cinema.
Japanese cinema, specifically Kurosawa. They have every Kurosawa.
And Ozu.
Yeah.
And, like, they go hard on Japanese cinema, which we appreciate because...
I mean, that's probably most of what we own, actually. A
big chunk of our collection is samurai films.
If I didn't have this Bollywood podcast, I would probably have a Japanese movie podcast because that's some of my favorite stuff.
So kind of all that aside, I have gotten the impression over the years, though, that Criterion is interested in Bollywood and is interested in Indian cinema. And so there have kind of been moments that have popped up, like once on Twitter, them saying that they'd love to get the rights to Sholay, and then we never kind of saw anything. Or recently, I know that they had said someone involved with the company...
They said five things, like, there's going to be a box set.
Yeah, like someone involved...
They also keep this very, like, secretive. Yeah. Like, I only saw today what the August ones are going to be.
Yeah.
And, like, they really play their cards close to the vest on what's going to be.
Yeah. So someone involved in the company, I know Manish Mathur and I were talking about this, I think he sent me the kind of heads up about it, said that there's going to be a Bollywood box set. And we haven't seen that come to fruition. We don't know, like, what era of Bollywood it's going to be. Though, based on this, I think it's probably going to be pretty classic stuff.
Well, if they said Bollywood, then it's got to be 70s. If it's Hindi cinema, then, you know, earlier possibly. But there's just rumors. We just have conjecture. We don't know.
Yeah. And from what I understand, apparently, and this is, again, me kind of remembering what was talked about at the time.
This is like 6 months ago. I'm remembering.
Yeah. Now, so. But apparently they, like, surveyed, you know, Indian film critics and filmmakers and asked, like, what were the essential movies? And they got back, like, not a lot. The list they got back didn't have a lot of overlap. And
because
they
there's
that was
a
really
bunch of different film cultures there. And everyone is going to say something from their group as well. So instead of doing a Bollywood box set, they would have to do seven box sets.
So I have noticed that the Criterion Channel does attempt to kind of fill in some of the gaps that the collection has. And I also kind of wonder if maybe it's like testing waters for things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they have put out on the channel more films from Black filmmakers, more films from women. And now we have two collections focusing on classic Hindi language film directors, specifically Raj Kapoor and Vimla Roy. And this really excited us because these are films that we have been wanting to see. We would like more people to engage with them. This is really putting these films on a platform where people who are not already familiar with Bollywood or already familiar with Indian cinema are going to be paying attention.
It gets the stamp of approval.
Exactly. It gets that Criterion stamp of approval. And they're now like accessible to people who, you know, might not know how to seek them out. And so that really excited us.
Who don't want to watch a Shimmer YouTube video, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. So that really excited us. And we knew like that the presentation quality was going to be there and that the subtitles were going to be good.
Although they were so small on Do Bigga Zaman.
Yeah.
They were like, it was hard to actually pay attention. But they were maybe like 3 inches long.
That's certainly, I think, one of the big advantages of the Criterion Collection is like the presentation, the quality is just so good. The subtitles are good. And so that's why, you know, when you're exploring world cinema, it tends to be one of the places to go to because you know you can trust that the movie's going to look good and have English subtitles. So we wanted to take the time to just kind of discuss these two collections. I don't know how long they are up for. I tried to look on the site today and I couldn't tell how long they were up for.
No, it's not like Mubi where it tells you how long.
Yeah, it does tell you when they're disappearing though. So you can kind of click on
leaving
soon. When you're on your interface, you can click on leaving soon. So maybe there's a spot on the interface or on the website and I just couldn't tell.
We don't have the Criterion Channel typically. We only bought it for these past 2 months to watch some things and do this episode.
Yeah.
It is expensive.
Yeah.
And we have so many other streaming services for the podcast that this was just kind of an occasional indulgence.
Yeah, yeah. You and I will sign up for a month or two, watch the things we want to watch, and then leave it. And that's partly because we have a collection of physical films that we haven't even finished watching.
I'm 80% through them. I'm doing a lot of work on those.
Yeah. But I was really excited about the new King Hu the newly streaming King Hu.
A streaming debut, I think.
Which is part of why we got the Criterion Collection. So these two collections are on Vimal Roy and Raj Kapoor. There are 5 films from Vimal Roy and 3 from Raj Kapoor. And we thought kind of the best way to cover this, considering kind of the scope of our podcast and what we have the time for at the moment.
These are long movies, folks.
We picked 2 of the shorter ones. But is to watch one film from each collection. That's not to say that these are the only 2 that we are interested in watching, but we just thought that was kind of the easiest way to approach it. Now, we're not going to be going into too much background on either filmmaker. We have discussed one of the films in the Vimla Roy collection before, Madhumati. So there's a noir episode on that film.
And I think we want to do a full episode on his Devdas at some point.
Yes, we do want to dive deeper.
That's a big deal.
Deeper into Vimla Roy's filmography at some point. So this is the second film from his we'll be discussing. And at some point, we would like to dedicate an episode to him. We have done an episode previously on Raj Kapoor, where we watched Aag and Maranam Joker with Beth from Beth Loves Bollywood.
She was mad at me, as I recall, for making us all watch Maranam Joker.
Yeah, whenever I let you pick films for guests, it's always a bit of a disaster.
Hey, it's fine.
Leave links to both of those in the show notes. But we're primarily going to be focusing just on the films themselves here.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have...
They're pretty good. I liked them.
Do you have anything to add about the Criterion Channel or the Criterion Collection or just kind of the North American interest in Indian film?
I mean, this is a good sign.
Yeah.
Once Criterion puts its stamp on something, it kind of gets known for being higher class than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
So early on in the Criterion Collection, they did RoboCop and The Killer and Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
And this is in like the 80s. So roughly contemporary. And, you know, these probably had a bit of a resurgence because of it. Because, you know, it was harder to watch movies again back then. So having a boutique label put out a Laserdisc and saying, like, this is some of the best cinema has to offer, probably boosted the profiles of Verhoeven and John Woo.
Mm-hmm.
And also Michael Bay. Because Armageddon and The Rock, I think, are both in the Criterion Collection. And I think definitely Michael Bay's had kind of a critical resurgence lately.
Pain and Gain, man.
Yeah.
Pain and Gain.
So, like, it is kind of a big deal that Criterion is seeking out Indian cinema, because it could be kind of a deal breaker, or a game changer.
I do want to add that, you know, I don't think Bollywood or Indian cinema needs a stamp of approval from...
No. It's doing fine on its own.
Yeah, from Criterion in order, you know, it doesn't need, quote unquote, like the Western stamp of approval in order to be legitimized and taken seriously.
That's what we're here for.
No. We don't feel that way. We already, you know, are interested in the Hindi language film industry and in the history of the Hindi language film industry. But we have had a lot of challenges in our ongoing study of Bollywood, especially with
older stuff,
a lot of the classic films.
Getting them to restore these things for us would be great.
You know, we can often find literature about them, but that doesn't always mean we can find the films themselves.
I'm thinking about the Raj Kapoor studio fire, right? Like, they probably lost some stuff there. And, like, it seems like a lot of these movies were just mistreated. So Criterion's the ones who are able to restore them to about as good as they could possibly be, assuming they could find the files.
And I think you and I also feel that we would like to see a larger awareness and appreciation for Indian cinema as a whole in global film culture.
Where's the Mani Ratnam box set?
Like, I would like to see, you know, again, we're in Canada, and so we have a certain Western perspective. But, you know, as far as kind of the way that world cinema is understood in the West, we'd like to see Indian cinema be just more accessible and be more of interest.
I mean, it's...
Beyond Satyajit Ray, who is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's an excellent filmmaker.
He's just not the only one.
He's not the only one. The only mode of filmmaking.
I wonder if at a certain point, kind of Americans decided that Hindi cinema especially, but Indian cinema in general, was their biggest competition for worldwide hegemony. Now I think China's probably the biggest competition for box office dollars. I mean, this whole year's screwed. Who knows?
Yeah.
But last year
it was a Chinese film that was number one at the global
box office. Yeah, right. And, you know, Japanese movies kicking ass right now too. But, like, I wonder if there was just maybe a conscious decision to let's sideline Indian movies because we don't want to have people become aware of how popular they are. Also the connection with Soviet Russia too. Like, they were so big there. And I wonder if maybe, you know, possibly there was a top level thing. I'm thinking specifically of how the CIA funded experimental painters in the 50s as a way to combat communism. And maybe there was just some sort of writ putting down, like, hey, just don't review these movies.
Yeah, I think that's an analysis beyond the scope of what I...
You don't think the CIA should... you don't want to talk about the
right
CIA
now
at all today?
But Indian cinema used to be a bit more prominent at...
This is from then. This is the period where they had the biggest awards success in the West.
A bit more prominent at global film festivals and also in art houses. And based on kind of what I recall, from when we were talking about cons, that's I remember that starting to peter off kind of in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Both of these films, though, I will say, were released in the USSR and did well there.
When you know, when you read what the plot descriptions are, it shouldn't be a huge surprise.
As well as China. I think Indian cinema has always had a global reach, but why the West stopped paying attention, I'm not entirely sure.
It's because of the CIA. Yeah. If this podcast gets canceled and a new co-host is installed for Aaron to be with, you'll know it was the spooks that took me out.
So all of that is to say is that we're hoping to see more Indian content from Criterion. But by no means is the Criterion stamp of approval, by no means does Bollywood or Hindi language cinema need it.
Be all end all. You don't need it.
Yeah.
But also, it was the CIA.
It's just, we just appreciate that Criterion is making these films more accessible. And I think we also would just really like to be able to buy some really pretty Blu-rays.
Yeah, that's all we want.
We just like, just selfishly,
let,
we just...
Let us buy products.
We want a really pretty Blu-ray of Sholay.
We want the 30% off too. Okay. And we want review copies. Criterion, if you're listening, and you want good reviews of your Bollywood collection whenever it comes out, hit us
up. And again, like when Criterion releases something, it does kind of cause like the cinephile community, critics, film Twitter, what have you, film historians to kind of like take notice.
There's whole podcasts that dissect like the Criterion collection and what does this mean for entering the collection and what sort of things are they opening up. And this is deeply linked to American film Twitter.
Yeah.
It's kind deeply, of... Yeah. So
I think it's really important to articulate that by no means does Indian cinema need, you know, the Western white approval.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't.
No.
They're just good movies.
And if the CIA kills me for saying this, I'm not afraid of them.
Okay, I don't know where that came from, but we're going to move into discussing the films themselves. So first up, we're going to be discussing Bimal Roy's Do Bigha Zameen. I'd actually seen this film before.
Yeah, you watched it in school, right?
Yeah, this is one of the three Bollywood films that I saw in university.
It's a Hindi film. It's not really Bollywood yet in the 50s, I would say.
Not really Bollywood yet. That's fair.
Yeah.
And we've discussed the other two that I watched. So I also saw Dilse and Mother India. Now, we
completed the trio.
I didn't see this in a film studies class, though.
What did you watch in? Comparative literature?
Yes. Oh. Proletarian literature.
Yeah, well, I get that. That makes sense.
We discussed two films in my 400-level comparative literature, proletarian literature course. This one and Pabst, The Three-Penny Opera, which is also very good. I actually did a whole lecture presentation on The Three-Penny Opera for that class. I got an A.
Yeah, the Black Freighter came and brought you an A. Thanks, Black Freighter.
So I'd seen this film before, and actually, I used to have a copy, and it has between our moving apartments, it's disappeared. So I was excited that this was one of the films that they chose for.
I mean, it's a super fun series. Movie, right?
Like, yeah,
it's a real pick me up.
The other films available in this kind of five film streaming collection are Devdas, Madhumadi, Sujata, and Bandini. So, Do Bigha Zameen means two bighas of land. A bigha is a unit of measurement, but it is, from what I understand, not standardized from state to state in India.
That would make things very complicated. It didn't seem like a lot of land that he had.
I do often see this translated as two acres of land. Yeah.
Acres would be... That's what I'd seen 2 acres. Yeah, I think Letterboxd calls it that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I know about 2 acres. That's about how big my parents' place is.
I think it was released under like The Cruel City or some title like that.
That makes sense.
Makes it sound really neorealist.
Yeah. Which this is.
Yeah. Came out in 1953, directed by Bimal Roy, as we said. It stars Balraj Sahani, Nirupa Roy, Ratan Kumar, Murad, Jagdeep, and Meena Kumari. It's a bit of a cameo from Meena Kumari.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the short story Rikshawala by Salil Chowdhury. And in agreeing to let Bimal Roy use this story, he said he wanted to score the film, that he wanted to compose the music for the film. So he's also the composer.
It's quite the Renaissance man.
Yeah. The title comes from Rabindranath Tagore's Dewi Bigha Jomi. And it was inspired by Italian neorealism.
No way. Really?
Films like Vittorio De Sica's Bicycle Thieves, which was first screened in India at the international, or maybe that wasn't the first screening, but it was screened at the first international film festival in Mumbai in 1952. And from what I understand, that was, I think, a huge inspiration for many filmmakers, not just Roy.
Mm-hmm.
You see Bicycle Thieves cited as an influence from so many Indian filmmakers.
Filmmakers all over the world. Like that, the influence of Italian neorealism is like way bigger than I think we give it credit for.
Because mm-hmm.
you get sort of that socialist realism stuff in Latin America.
And it hasn't gone away. Like even Anurag Kashyap cites Bicycle Thieves.
Or as the Dardenne brothers, right? Like that's,
oh, definitely. Yeah. So I think this and also Renoir going to India to make The River.
Because Rai meets Renoir at that. Yeah.
Are kind of, yeah. So the screening of Bicycle Thieves and Renoir going to India to make The River are kind of, I think, two kind of big moments that really kind of launched the parallel cinema movement or inspired the parallel cinema movement.
It's like the Velvet Underground's first album, right?
Yeah. And this film is certainly considered kind of within that emerging parallel cinema trend that starts in the 50s, though it does combine elements of popular cinema, has song and dance sequences. It was awarded the All India Certificate of Merit at the first National Film Awards and won the first Filmfare Award for Best Film.
Oh, good job.
Yeah. And it won an international prize at Cannes. Did not walk away with the Grand Prix, which was what the Palme d'Or was called at the time. That went to the Japanese film, Gate of Hell.
Which is in the Criterion Collection.
And
we have. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think this movie might actually be better, though. It's been a long time since I watched Gate of Hell.
Yeah.
I've also watched so many samurai movies that they kind of blur together.
I don't entirely understand what this international prize was. When I looked it up, like a number of films had won this international prize.
Maybe it's a Sir Terry Regard kind of.
Yeah. No, I think it's more like the runner-up awards. Because again, all the awards had different names back then. And this was only like the 7th Cannes Film Festival. Okay, so with all of that, I'm going to stop talking. Matt, you're going to describe the plot.
Okay. So Balraj Sahani's character, Shambhu, has the titular two biggas of land. And at the beginning of the movie, him and his wife are very excited because it's raining and there's been a big drought there. They have a son who's very precocious. So it's a happy little farm family. But wouldn't you know it, the local zamindar is thinking of bulldozing essentially this whole plot that all of these small tenants live on and putting up a mill and essentially starting to industrialize his holdings. And which makes me think this is probably around the same time as Lutera. So kind of like that fall of the Zamindars period where they're sort of selling off their wares and trying to become rich by owning businesses and things and art pieces instead of just being landholders because the land's going to get taken away. So that kind of tracks with around that time period. And Lutera was also in the 50s. So around then, just after independence, right? Kind of the next decade. Shambhu kind of foolishly goes to the zamindar and gets told, okay, you need to make, 250 rupees, I think?
Well, he has to pay off his debt.
Yeah, because he's had to borrow to get seeds. He's had to borrow to get fertilizer.
Rice
for his family. So he's deep in hock on top of his land essentially being mortgaged to the zamindar.
But he doesn't understand how much money he owes.
Yeah.
Because he can't do math. So.
And I think these guys are kind of ripping him off too. They've cheated him over the years into putting his thumb down on things and he didn't even know what he was doing.
Exactly. And he doesn't necessarily understand interest. So when he tells his son kind of everything that he owes, comes up with a number, I think it's like 50 or so. But then when he goes to the Thakur, he discovers it's like 250. So he needs to make 250 rupees. They go to court.
Yeah, he actually gets sued over this.
He needs to make 250 rupees within a certain time period.
3 months, I think.
Yeah, in order to save the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Well, he goes to Calcutta
after
a guy tells him that the money just flies through the wind there. And in a scene very similar to what happens in Street 420, you get this guy who's essentially just fallen off the back of a turnip truck. who goes around trying to figure out...
Okay, and his son follows him.
His son sneaks on the train with him, and he doesn't send his son back because essentially it was either go or stay there and starve. Like, this is their only shot.
And that kind of father-son dynamic throughout the film bicycle feels thing. Very Bicycle Thieves.
Yeah. So Shambu looks around for work. He gets in trouble with cops. He gets harassed by people. He gets fooled by people. He eventually is able to find kind of a kindly older woman who runs a sort of halfway house, I guess, where he can get by for 6 annas a day.
Mm-hmm.
Also very similar to Shree 420. The same thing happens basically, except they're sleeping on the ground. And he helps out this guy who's sick in the room next door, who turns out to be a rickshaw guy. And the rickshawwala teaches him how to be a rickshawwala, and then they kind of share the rickshaw. And yeah, he works his ass off in the city. Meanwhile, back at home, his wife, who has not worked,
mm-hmm.
one of the things I found sort of strange about this whole thing is that he tells her, like, you don't have to work. You know, no one in our family has ever worked, but, you know, Mother India worked. So
She's pregnant.
But she's kind of stuck back in the village waiting with her... I think it's his father.
Yeah, her father-in-law.
Yeah, and he's pretty sickly as well. So they're just waiting for Shambu to send money. His son becomes a shoeshine boy, and they have a variety of ups and downs in the city. But eventually, some really bad stuff happens, and the wife comes to town to find out what's going on, comes to Calcutta, and some tragedy occurs.
Yeah, I mean, again, we said it was inspired by Italian neorealism. This is not the happiest of films.
It seemed like it was mostly, apart from some
location
farm
shooting.
Scenes. No, I thought it was stage bound for sure.
Oh, from what I understand, Roy, like that was one of the things that really inspired him about Bicycle Thieves was the location shooting.
Okay, so if it was live, because there's some sort of, they see the Howrah Bridge and stuff, but... Okay, yeah, I thought it was kind of stagey, but...
All the rickshaw scenes, I think.
Okay, that's good.
On the street.
Yeah, Shree 420, very much stage-bound, but...
No, this feels kind of more in it.
Yeah, neorealist.
Yeah, more kind of in-city, on the street level, I think.
I don't think I got that so much, but I was kind of just looking for staginess, I guess. I don't know.
Mm.
But I'm happy if that's the case.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this film is nicely restored, but it's not the best restoration. And when I saw it in university, I think it was a far worse copy.
There's only so much Criterion can do.
There is only so much that they can do. But for the most part, it looks really great.
Yeah.
I really like this film. I mean, these movies always kind of tend to feel a bit like eating your vegetables.
It's propaganda.
I guess we can talk about that. No, I meant more that, like, they are serious films about serious things that, you know, are not always full of jokes, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think when done...
Jagdeep the Shoeshine Kid's kind of
he's
funny.
He's so great.
I like that guy.
I think when done really well, this kind of, you know, this kind of realism, while on the surface I think it sounds really kind of depressing
Maudlin.
And boring. Like, why would you want to watch that? But when you sit down and watch it, it's actually a very lively film, and you really, really grow to care about this family and about what they're going through. And I will say, like, it has kind of a bittersweet ending, so I didn't come away from it like completely despondent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that relationship between Shambu and his son is so strong. The son and the rest of the shoeshiners are so well done. Like, that it really, I don't know, I really am moved by this film.
Mm-hmm.
Propaganda, though, you say?
Yeah. I mean, India was a socialist country.
Yeah.
At this point in time.
I don't think this movie is based as, like, propagandistic.
Propagandistic?
I don't think it's as propagandistic as, like, Mother India.
It is not so much like India's the best, rah, 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 and all of our sacrifices are worth it.
It doesn't have that kind of nationalism sentiment.
But this is saying that, you know, the zamindars will screw you over, and that collective land ownership would be the best way to do it.
Mm.
That kind of thing. Like, it's less obvious.
Mm.
but it is very much about how capitalism has failed these people. I don't think it's a coincidence that...
It's certainly socialist.
Yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence that when Shambu goes to the Zamindar's house for the first time, his grandfather clock plays the... the Big Ben sort of thing. Because, you know, the English left and then these guys are still around. I mean, you got to serve somebody. There's always going to be a master out there. And I think it's very much sort of saying, this is wrong. A better world is possible.
I don't disagree with that. I certainly think that, you know, the film has...
It doesn't really provide an alternative, is the thing.
Well, I certainly think the film has a political angle, as did Italian neorealism. But I wouldn't go so far as to say propaganda. I think it's more humanist than propaganda, personally. Sure. And I don't really think it's shot like a propaganda film.
No, it's not that sort of heroic Mother India again.
Yeah, or sort of Riefenstahl.
No, I think this is... It's very much... It's political filmmaking, you're right. It's not so much... It is trying to convince you of something.
Yeah.
I think that this aligns with what the government would have wanted at the time.
To be clear, all filmmaking is political.
And propagandistic in some ways.
In some ways. Every piece of film has an ideology. I always find it bizarre when people expect the film industry or movies or art to be divorced from ideology.
That's how come the American impossible? Army comes off so good in all these Marvel movies? Well,
yeah,
maybe they got a little bit of help in the budgetary department, huh?
It's impossible. But I'm sure as people, you know, who listen to our show have figured out over the years, you and I are pretty left-leaning. And so, you know, I think we have...
It's right up our alley.
Yeah, I think we have a strong appreciation for these kinds of themes. Yeah, it's really well done. And I think, like, I don't want to ruin too much, although, I mean, it is a film from 1953, but
it's almost 70 years old.
Yeah, and it's highly acclaimed. I would hope that people have seen it. But I had kind of... It's been, like, over 10 years since I saw this film the first time, and I had kind of forgotten about what ends up being kind of the central... tragedy, kind of.
I was expecting something completely different.
That kicks off the third act.
Oh, I was like the thing right before the end. I was surprised. I totally thought that some other sort of catastrophe was going
to
happen.
Okay, we'll get to that. But I had kind of forgot
You know what? You want to talk about not being propagandistic? There was literally a time when a rich guy gets in his rickshaw. And gets him to chase another rickshaw and treats him like he's a horse, basically.
Well, okay, that was the scene I was referring to.
Yeah, like, that is very much saying, like, rich people are assholes, and the common man, you know, you're being run like a dog just for $6.
And I will say that scene feels very Soviet montage.
Yes.
It's so incredibly effective. So I'd kind of forgot the way that scene plays out, because it had been 10 years since I saw it. And I just, like, I was on the edge of my seat. Like,
I thought someone was going to die.
My memory came back. I knew what happened. But it's so well shot. And it's so well edited.
And a car chase is twice as exciting when a man is the car.
Well, yeah. And it's just like, I mean, to watch this. Exactly. A car chase. A rickshaw race in... A film from 1953 where you are just as on the edge of your seat as I feel like I am in many Fast and the Furious films.
It's Fast and the Furious Zero, Two Legs, Too Furious.
It's so well done. Was there a moment that stuck out to you, or do you want to talk about...
I don't want to spoil the ending, but like some of that stuff by the end is pretty... Well, I thought he was going to die in that.
Oh, okay.
I'm spoiling a 70-year-old movie, but he does not die after this sort of... rickshaw chase. But
oh, I thought you might
some
be
more bad stuff happens after.
I thought you might be referring to what happens with his wife when she comes to town, which starts to feel very D.W. Griffith.
Yeah. And yes, yeah, there's kind of a guy who traps her, and also, yeah, these are, you know, pure innocent village people who come to the city and are immediately hoodwinked. Mm-hmm. The city is evil. I think both movies basically imply that, right?
But it also feels to me like it is in step with the Indian film tradition, with things that we see in Indian cinema. And I'm talking here specifically about the songs. This kind of melding of, you know, these kind of socialist, humanist storyline that we see in things like neorealism with the musical aspect. And to me, that's kind of where I think Roy is really kind of pulling it all together. And we talk a bit about how, you know, like parallel cinema and mainstream cinema were on these two tracks for such a long time that they were parallel to one another and never touching. But more recently, they have been crossing over and we've been getting more kind of indie films with song and dance numbers, giving rise to this kind of like Mindy idea, this middle cinema idea. But those films still tend to be kind of really focused on people who are well off. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily the lower classes. So yeah, I'm just curious how you feel about like this kind of melding of tones.
Well, there isn't a ton of dancing. I can think of maybe two sequences. And
there's song and dance.
There's songs, yeah. But I think they're really, there's kind of that rain song at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then one that they sing in the kind of compound.
And Meena Kumari's number.
But they're integrated into the plot really well.
Yeah.
I'll say that about Shree 422. They're not really, oh, let's stop the movie and have a 15-minute song sequence like you get in a lot of modern movies. Like, it seems to flow really naturally. But also,
I think that's part of why it works.
I mean, Mother India did the same thing, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like this film. I think it's well worth catching up with if you haven't seen it, or giving it another look if you haven't seen it in a while.
Like, I mean, it's exciting. It's not like a propaganda movie in that it's super boring and trying to hit you over the head, like Triumph of the Will or something. Like, it is compelling in its message, and it's trying to entertain you as well as educate you.
And I think it's really empathetic.
Yeah.
You know, I think, again, like, you really care about this family. And when his wife comes to the city and she's getting, like, trapped by this... by this predator.
Well, it's just like hey, oh, my husband now lives that way. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm his best friend. I know all about your husband. Like, oh, come on.
Well, and I guess, like, as someone who watches, you know, like, labor cinema, I'm just like, and neorealism, things, you know, from, like, the Dardenne brothers and Mike Lee and Ken Loach. I'm just like, how far are they going to go with this?
Mm-hmm.
I will say, thankfully, and maybe that's why I find the end kind of bittersweet, because there are moments in the film when you know it could get so much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also the 50s. They're not going to show
what
you're imagining. But the fact that you're imagining it is probably why it's in there. It's just kind of, you know how bad this could be.
Yeah. All right. Anything else
on that fun note
to add about Topeka Salmon?
Nope. We'll go to Interval. So the Interval song is one of many bops from Shree 420. It was hard to pick one, but Ramaya Vastavaya from Shree 420, I'll say it again. yeah, I liked it a lot, so there we go. Ramaya Vastavaya, Ramaya Vastavaya, Ramaya Vastavaya, Ramaya Vastavaya. Maine dil tujhko diya, maine dil tujhko diya. Oh Ramaya Vastavaya, Ramaya Vastavaya.
This episode of Bollywood is for Lovers is brought to you by Natural Light Edmonton. Over the last year, staying home has become our new way of life. We've all been doing our part to help keep others safe. Still, it's hard not to miss those special moments of adventure that turn your average day into an extraordinary one. But what if we told you that these moments could still happen, all while you're safe in your own backyard? Natural Light Edmonton provides custom-designed, luxury sunrooms, balcony enclosures, decks, patio covers, and gemstone lights. With their help, you can turn your outdoor space into a place for play, for excitement, for adventure. A place where you can truly live in the moment and plan for more moments to come. Learn more about Natural Light Edmonton and discover outdoor comfort at my-naturallight.com.
That's my-naturallight.com.
With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout-out to Your Forest. Your Forest is a podcast about the natural world. Hear stories about the environment, renewable resources, conservation, forestry, hunting, fishing, and more. This is a podcast for those who cannot live without the joys and wonders of all wild things. Find Your Forest wherever you get your podcasts or at yourforestpodcast.com. That's yourforestpodcast.com. So that was Ramaya Vastavaya from Shree 420. It's directed by Raj Kapoor, came out in 55. Features Raj Kapoor as himself.
We first want to say the other films available.
Oh, sure. So the other ones are Awara and Sangam. And let's be honest, folks. We picked this one because it's the shortest. It's 3 hours long, whereas Sangam is about 4 and Awara is about 3.5.
Yes. I mean, certainly that was a factor. But also,
once Maranam Jokered, twice burned.
There was also overlap in theme and plots between these two films.
Yeah. And, you know, I just thought it looked good. And you know what? I thought this is kind of a masterpiece, really. It's a fantastic movie. So this movie features Raj Kapoor, Nargis, Nadira, and Nemo. All first names. It's easy. So the 420 question refers to the section of the Indian Penal Code, not weed. But this is the punishment for cheating and being a con man.
Yeah, Matt said we should have done this film for 420. And I was like, then everyone would have assumed it was like a cannabis episode or something. I don't know.
I thought that would have been a funny joke if people would have liked it.
Fair enough.
So this features Raj Kapoor's version of the little tramp type guy, which you get a little bit in Maranam Jokered, but you get a lot here. And
yeah.
As I understand, he's big in Awara as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Charlie Chaplin, I feel like... Do I need to explain Charlie Chaplin? I feel like everyone...
I think people are familiar with Charlie Chaplin.
Familiar with Charlie Chaplin.
And this is not like a straight one-to-one. Like, he's not ripping him off.
No.
He has some mannerisms that are similar and a little bit of his outfit. But I would say that Raju is kind of his own guy.
Yeah. But the little tramp character is a character that Chaplin played across many of his films. My favorite's probably... I think I like the Gold Rush the best, maybe.
Of the tramp movies?
Yeah.
Modern Times count as the little tramp?
I think Modern Times counts,
I'd probably pick that one. But the Great Dictator doesn't.
That's what I was going to say. The Great Dictator doesn't
He talks
count.
All the time in The Great Dictator.
Great Dictator is probably my favorite Chaplin film, but
yeah,
doesn't count.
Chaplin also well appreciated by the Criterion Collection.
Yes.
I think they're all there.
There's a lot of Chaplin on Criterion. We don't own a single one though, surprisingly.
Nope.
But they're all quite funny. So I think people are familiar, even if you've never seen a Chaplin film, you kind of seen the getup and have kind of a basic
Hitler
idea.
Mustache.
Yeah.
Goes around, doesn't talk much.
I mean, he did it before Hitler was a thing,
yeah.
But
goes
like
to.
I mean, the basic premise is that he's like a hapless vagabond who gets into a lot of, you know, fun
misadventures,
pieces of physical comedy, and falls in love.
Tries to
easily.
Do some schemes too. Yeah. He's kind of a little stinker.
Yeah. So Raj Kapoor is clearly modeling this character he has here in Shree 420 and in Awara after Chaplin. But I wouldn't say it's a one-to-one like he's not ripping Chaplin off. I don't think
he talks all the time for one.
Yeah.
He won't shut up, really.
Yeah, but you can see the origins. Like, you can clearly see that he's inspired by Chaplin.
Yeah. So this was the highest grossing Indian film of all time when it was released. And then Mother India shows up 2 years later and beats it. But
yeah,
pretty good.
Mother India dethrones it 2 years later.
Guys, I think I probably like... I don't know. I might like this better than Mother India. It's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
A note on two of the characters... Nargis's character is named Vidya, which means knowledge, and she's a teacher. Winky, winky. And Nadira's character, Maya, means illusions and trickery. Winky, winky.
Yes, we wouldn't have, you know, we don't know Sanskrit, so we wouldn't have gone
Wait,
on
you don't know
that.
Sanskrit? Have you been lying to me this whole time?
So I thought it was worth pointing that out.
Yeah.
So the plot is pretty straightforward.
Which girl would you pick?
Nargis.
Oh, Maya, for sure.
What?
A wasp-waisted femme fatale who leads you into a sexy game of cheating people and smoking all the time? And she walks around kind of like vamping constantly? Of course.
But Nargis is so, like, she's luminous in this film.
Literally, her spirit leaves her body and sings a song about how Raju shouldn't go.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I find her very... This might be my favorite performance I've seen of hers.
Anytime Nadira shows up, though, I'm just like, oh, Nadira's back.
Okay.
Where's Maya been the whole time?
So, Raj Kapoor is kind of a vagabond. He comes to Mumbai.
Well, first he runs into Nemo in his car. And it's kind of important. You want me to say it?
Sure.
Okay, so... He's walking to Bombay.
Yes.
And he sings a song. This is a very important song. That, you know, my shoes are from Japan. My pants are from England. My hat is from Russia. But my heart is Hindustani.
Yes. His heart is Indian. And that's
one of the most famous songs in Indian cinema.
Yeah, that's a very classic song that we have heard before. And, you know, again, like... has become a symbol for Indian nationalism. It's Mera Juta Hai Japani.
Yeah. So he sings this song, and we're all suitably, you know, full of patriotic fervor. Mm-hmm. Then on the road, this rich guy, he pretends to fall over so that a rich guy will come mm-hmm. and sort of resuscitate him, maybe give him a ride. We find out that this is the bad guy of the movie. He's sitting there with... Actually, is it him? I think it is. The rich guy at the beginning?
I'm not too sure.
Okay. I don't know if it is that guy, actually. No, I don't think so, because he's got like two daughters, and I think he's a politician.
Yeah.
So, a rich guy pulls over, and they have a kind of an argument, and this is where we get the beginning of many times in which Raju is called a 420, mm-hmm. and you see this guy's license plate actually says 840, and Raju's like, if I'm a 420, then you're an 840. You're double crooked. And this kind of is his whole thing. Is that, like, you know, he might pull a fast one here and there, but he's a good-hearted guy. Whereas the rich, those guys, are the real 420s.
Exactly. Yes, this is kind of one of the central themes of the film. So he goes to Mumbai, and again, like, he's a vagabond. He's a bum. He doesn't have a single anna to his name.
He tries
to buy bananas.
Two bananas with his annas.
He tries to buy two bananas, is unable to, but he does explain, or he sort of hints to the banana seller, this lovely woman who comes up later on in the film, that, you know, she should maybe readjust her prices.
Yeah.
And she's so grateful.
It's kind of a who's on first type conversation.
Yeah.
He's charming.
She's so grateful for this that she gives him the bananas for free and says that he reminds her of her son and he will forever be her son from now on.
Great scene. He eats one of the bananas and then throws it on the ground. And then Nargis steps on it, falls down, and everyone laughs at her.
And that's how they meet.
And, well, yeah. And then she goes to the store. And then she throws it on the ground and then a fat guy falls on it and then everyone laughs at him. Then that guy throws it, then Raju falls on it.
Yeah.
And it's just showing this, like, yeah, Bombay is kind of a tough town. Everyone will laugh at you if you fall down. But if the next person falls down, then you're allowed to laugh too. And it's kind of a cycle of cruelty, mm-hmm. this city.
Yeah. I would say, like, the first half of this film is just, like, it's a lot of fun and a lot of gags.
It's very vignettes.
Yeah, exactly. It takes a while for the plot to really kick in.
It takes a literal hour before the plot kicks in.
So Raj Kapoor meets Nargis. She's a school teacher. He's instantly smitten. He gets a job.
Well, hold on. He sells his honesty medal. Like, he has come from wherever he's from. He doesn't even say. He's from Allahabad, and he was an orphan. But he's come with his BA in mm-hmm. something, and his medal that he won for being honest.
Yes, he's an educated man.
And he pawns the medal.
He might be poor, but he's not uneducated.
Yeah, he pawns the medal for, I think, 50 rupees, which immediately gets hustled from him by mm-hmm. some guys playing three-card Monty. But... the symbolism is very obvious. He literally sells his honesty. And Nargis is appalled by this, actually. She's just like, what kind of man would literally sell his honesty first thing upon coming to town?
Mm-hmm. So he gets a job at a laundry, and through this job, he meets...
After setting a whole bunch of stuff on fire.
Yes, after setting a whole bunch of stuff on fire. He meets Nadira, who's playing Maya, and she kind of sucks him in to becoming a con man. And so
he's able to deal cards in such a way that he can always win at some kind of game. It's like three-card poker, I guess. I'm not entirely sure what they're playing.
Yeah, so he has this way of dealing cards where he can always win.
Yeah, and he goes and hustles some people at this club.
So she kind of teams up with him to hustle all the rich men in town down. And then she kind of brings him on board with larger cons with Nemo.
Well,
and
Seth, he figures out what's going on because he challenges him. And they call him Seth, but it's Dharmachand, I think is his last name. And then he figures out that, oh, this guy, he's only good at kind of doing the same card trick over and over again. I'm going to go meet him at the laundromat and say, you're mine now. Mm-hmm. I own you. Don't worry about Maya. We're going to run this city together. And they set him up with this company that's a Ponzi scheme, essentially selling shares in a company that's going to mine for gold in Tibet that isn't going to do anything. It's just ripping people off.
Mm-hmm. So that's how he becomes a con man. And eventually he's asked essentially to con all of the common people, all of the poor people who, when he first came to the city, embraced him with open arms.
And talk about inflation. I mean, this is 2 years after Dobek Azaman, and Shambu and Dobek Azaman can get a whole room for 6 annas a night, whereas Raju has to spend a 1.50 rupee to sleep on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Like, it's rough out there.
Yeah. So I think this movie is a lot of fun. I mean, it's fantastic. Say, like, it takes a while for the plot to really kick in gear, but I don't really know if that's, like, that's not a problem because you're having so much fun just hanging out with Raj Kapoor.
Well, it's like a Chaplin movie, mm-hmm. which typically don't really have much of a plot at all. It's just him kind of getting into various weird situations, and that's what Raju does for the first hour. And mm-hmm. then meeting Maya and gets sucked into this world of rich people and wearing a suit, that's when it starts cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the film very much sees kind of, I think, money as corrupt.
Yeah.
That money is the thing that, yeah, that you are willing to sell your honesty away for. Mm-hmm. Though...
He does it willingly as soon as he gets there. Yeah. So it was always in him. Mm-hmm. It's more that, you know, a society that needs money will eventually corrupt everybody except for Nargis. Incorruptible. Although she does come to call him out at the end. I don't know if she was trying to buy a house, but like she does kind of come groveling by the end of it. But I don't think that she's given up her honor mm-hmm. or anything. It's just she just kind of wanted to see him off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm surprised that you would pick Maya. I think Nargis is fantastic as Vidya.
Maya's more my type.
Oh God, what does that say about me?
I don't know. You're smoking out of a big cigarette elongator thing and, you know, wearing evening gowns and kind of vamping around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing in a club.
Yeah. There is a pretty spectacular...
Two of them.
Dance sequence that happens in this club. I was thinking of the one that happens at Diwali.
Yeah.
That one's really good.
And then the Christmas one.
Mm-hmm.
But also... It reminds me of Bobby, where there's that song about how you're going to get, you know, you're going to get married to this crazy girl and she's going to ruin your life. Whereas Maya's just like, come with me and do cons all the time and rip people off. It's the best. And in that part, she jumps on top of a dinner table, which starts spinning for some reason. And the onlookers kind of turn into a mass of just gaping maws and eyes. And I got real... Metropolis vibes off of mm-hmm. that. Just kind of decadence and, you know, money fever. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, this film certainly amps up the spectacle from the previous one. And it's, you know, as you were saying earlier, it's far more stage bound.
Mm-hmm.
It feels far more kind of... What's the word I'm looking for?
Constructed?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem... I mean, I don't think it has that level of realism that Topic Azam
has. It is not sort of that nihilist kind of almost Steadicam, but pre-Steadicam following people around thing. This is a lot of just like zooming in on people's faces and, you know, a cast of hundreds, and it's very much a movie.
Yeah, and Raj Kapoor feels more like of like a character.
He's like an Orson Welles type director, I think. I could totally see them having some things in common. It was weird, like...
Did you see the ceiling?
A couple times. Og is definitely kind of an Orson Welles-y thing, too, like an artist going crazy. But by the time you get to Marinam Joker, I don't know, it's kind of really maudlin by that point. But I could see young Raj Kapoor and Welles getting along just fine.
Yeah, I think like there is some impressive and inventive filmmaking here. And not just in these kind of dance sequences. And again, it's like...
Cool camera work.
Impressive that Raj Kapoor could, you know, star, direct. I don't know if he wrote the thing as well.
He had a lot of roles on it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so...
But one of those sort of Renaissance man type guys who can...
Yeah, produced it. He didn't write it. He's not credited with the screenplay, but he did produce it.
But, like, they could do everything, right? Someone like that. You could see why he was such a big star. Even though, to me, he looks like Indian Walt Disney. Right? He's got the pencil-thin mustache and kind of, like, a genial, like, uncle sort of look to him.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You say that it's full of bops. Which one is your favorite?
I think the Ramaya Vastavai is my favorite, but...
That's Telugu.
Yeah.
And I guess Awara did so well, the Telugu dub of Awara did so well that Raj Kapoor wanted to thank them always, in some way.
Or just make his next movie more popular. Always thinking. Yeah, Marajuta Hijapani, I mean, it's kind of like a mission statement for, like, Indian film in general.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of amazing. The rain dance song totally works. The song where Nargis's body, like her soul, leaves and sings this heartbreaking song for Raju. Great.
My favorite is the one with all the children where she's singing about seeds and they have to guess what it is.
Yeah, it's a riddle. And the one where he tells his story with all the homeless people outside of Seth's house. Which, I mean, they should probably go somewhere else. I could see why...
Yeah, why are they camped right outside of the home of the man who's going to...
Of the main villain of the movie.
Yeah, the corrupt villain who wants to steal all their money with the little money that they have.
Yeah, it's... They could go somewhere else. Even, like, he even calls the cops to get them to leave. But they're there, like, the next day.
Yeah.
I could see... In one sense, I could kind of understand why he's so dismissive. Because they're always there in his backyard.
He's so dismissive of them.
Yeah. Just like, oh, they just keep coming back.
Yeah, you think that's why he develops a scheme?
No, he's just a horrible person. I was just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm not a horrible person.
Yeah. So ultimately, like, I think you already tipped your hat to kind of the themes of this film that, you know, like...
Money is the root of all evil.
Yeah, money is the root of all evil. It's, you know, the common man might do what he has to do to kind of get by, but it is the elite, it is the powerful, that they are the corrupt ones. And if the common man kind of...
They're the 840s, and the most you could be as Raj Kapoor is in 420.
Yeah.
And life is a 420 when you come down to it, which is kind of a sort of cheesy line, but like, it's sort of right, I guess.
Well, and also if common people like work together, then they can, you know, build a better... It has a very like utopian, optimistic ending
in the last 20 minutes
of like building a better society, a more kind of equitable society is kind of how I read that.
Yeah,
it's a fun movie though. It's full of a lot of good jokes. It's got a lot of great songs. It has like the plot is it takes a while to kick in. But that's not a problem because it's so...
It's also not like a rarity in Indian cinema.
No.
For someone to dick around is kind of like a lovable goofball for a whole hour.
And it's so enjoyable. Like I really liked it. And as you said, like it is really impressively shot. Yeah. So
it's good stuff. Criterion picked two good ones.
Yeah. We liked both of these films. We would encourage people to seek out, if you have the Criterion channel, to watch some of these.
If you haven't seen them already.
Yeah. Or again, like, rewatch them.
Yeah.
You know, these are beautiful restorations. This film looked great.
Yeah, it did. This one looked a lot better.
Yeah. All right. So with that, we are done this episode.
We did it.
We will be back in a week. We should have a new episode in a week.
Hopefully.
And what's it going to be, Matt?
So we were actually contacted by the people who made the TV show we liked so much, OK Computer. So we're hopefully going to be able to do a kind of deep dive with them onto sort of the influences and arguments that that show is making and kind of its place in the sci-fi landscape. So I'm looking forward to that.
So that should be out in a week. In the meantime, Matt, how can people keep up with the show?
At BollywoodPod. Facebook.com/BollywoodIsForLovers. Tumblr.com/BollywoodIsForLovers.
Yeah,
I think something like that. Just look it up on Tumblr. You'll find it. Leave us a review. Star rating would be nice. Apple Podcasts. Okay, so right now Apple Podcasts is kind of screwed up. Mm. And it might take a while for this episode to appear there. They did some upgrade of their system and now it's like chaos in Apple. So if you want to leave a review somewhere else, just let us know. But yeah, you can't count on Apple right now. Mm-hmm. Can't really count on them ever. It's their bad company.
And while you're leaving that review, you can subscribe to my other show that I do with Paul Matwichuk called Trash Aren't the Movies. We just put out an episode on Mystic Pizza and Mystic River.
They have a lot in common, don't they?
So much in common. So much in common. I mean, three childhood friends.
You killed my daughter.
So that is that. We're done.
Yep. Keep it 420.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.